This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with, is it Dr. or Professor Greg Dunn?
Doctor.
Dr. Greg Dunn, not Professor.
I was an associate professor for a while, but that title stayed with the position. It didn't move with me. So I'm Doctor. That always stays with me.
What's the difference between a professor and a doctor?
A professor is an academic position. Okay. So you often don't get to be a professor unless you've done a PhD. So A PhD is a degree. It's a research degree.
Yeah, that makes you a doctor.
Yeah, makes you a doctor. And then you might apply for a position in a university, which might be a lecturer. It might be a senior lecturer. It might be a reader. Could be an associate professor. Top of the tree is professor.
Okay.
And to get to a professor level, you have to have got a lot of research dollars. Mm-hmm. So universities are very keen on
money.
Research money.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would have to have a lot of publications.
Okay.
And a lot of students. So you have to be a very important researcher.
Okay, and you're not quite there yet?
No, because when you move into academia, if you want to be a professor, you really have to specialise.
Okay.
And when you work in viticulture and winemaking, it's broadly across disciplines.
Yeah.
So you're not really specialising, for instance, in the chemical constituents inside the nasal cavities of a seagull, for instance. We're a bit broader than that.
Okay, no, that's fair enough.
That was an extreme example to prove a point.
I can imagine someone dedicates their life to that. There's probably someone there doing that. So I hope I haven't offended anybody by saying that.
No.
Excellent. So what we want to talk about today is something a little bit technical, a little bit geeky, and that is, I call it respiration, but you call it transpiration.
Transpiration, the movement of water through plants.
Yeah. I also want to tie it in with nutrient uptake if we can as well. But let's start off with what are the big parts of a plant and what needs to be moved?
Okay. People like to talk about trees or plants as pumps.
Yes.
You probably have heard that.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a misnomer. So trees and plants, they don't actually pump water out of the soil. A better way to describe the process is a wick.
A wick?
A wick.
Like a wick for wax candles and things like that?
Absolutely.
Yep.
So what drives transpiration or the movement of water through a plant is evaporation from the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually pulls water up through the plant. So it's not being pumped from the roots, it's being pulled from the leaves.
Yep.
And the reason that happens is because in the soil, water is at a high water potential.
So lots of water in the soil.
It's close to, we measure things as water potential. Water potential of distilled water is zero. Any other water potential is negative. So the more water you take out of something, you reduce its water potential. Mm-hmm. Water potential in the soil is close to zero if the soil is fully saturated.
Yep.
In the atmosphere, it's much, much less than zero. Water's there, but it's in a gaseous state.
Yeah.
So the water potential in the atmosphere is much lower than it is in the soil, and that drives evaporation.
Is that like osmosis, where a high concentration goes to a low concentration?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's similar to osmosis.
Okay, so you'll see sometimes people have filters that use osmosis or reverse osmosis.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And the idea is that saliency is a classic one where you've got a filter and you have something that's got low salt on one side and just random salt molecules jumping back and forth slowly.
Well, it's the smaller molecules. So osmosis is the movement of water from a higher water potential to a lower water potential through a semi-permeable membrane.
That's right, yep.
So that is the definition of osmosis.
Okay.
So if you have a semi-permeable membrane that separates a very salty solution from a very distilled water solution or a solution with low salt in it, water will move from the pure water into the salty side until it balances.
Okay. Is that and is that sort of what the leaf is? Is it like a membrane that?
Yeah, look, it's evaporation, but it is the movement of water from a high water potential area to a low water potential area, which is the atmosphere.
Okay. And why does a plant want to do that?
Why that happens is an interesting question, Chris, because there's far more water that moves through the plant than is used by the plant in its processes. Like, the plant will need water for cell turgor. Cells don't grow unless they're turgid.
What does that mean? Turgid, as in
flaccid or turgid. So cells have to have a certain water content before they grow. They have to be turgid.
Yep.
There are a lot of processes that need water to happen in plants. Mm-hmm. A lot of enzymatic processes. Photosynthesis needs water.
Yep.
You know, we split water in photosynthesis. Light splits water. What I'm trying to say is that water is required for a lot of plant processes, so a plant needs water.
Yep.
But far more water flows through the plant than is needed for those processes.
Okay.
So plants initially evolved in a very wet, humid environment, so they didn't need to be concerned about water loss from the plant.
Mm-hmm.
As plants moved into drier environments, in order to maintain the water content in the plant, they had to develop leaves.
Okay, why is that?
I think I've just probably confused your audience a bit. So let's talk about, as well as plants requiring water for their physiology,
just processes, yep, and survival.
They require carbon dioxide to make sugars.
Yep.
So they need sugars to photosynthesize.
Yep.
What the leaf is it's the part of the plant that takes in the carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As a plant takes in carbon dioxide, it will lose water.
Yeah. Is that because the pores in the leaf open up to receive the carbon dioxide and that lets the water out?
At the same time.
Yeah.
So the reason plants transpire is a consequence of having to take in carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
So because they have to take in carbon dioxide, they have to open their leaves. A consequence of opening your leaves is that you will lose water.
Okay, it's just the water's there and it just gets out.
But that's the reason why plants have evolved to have leaves that have a surface, mm-hmm. have a waxy surface, and have those little pores over them. That reduces the amount of water that the plant will lose.
Does it not limit the amount of carbon dioxide absorbed?
It does, so there's always a balance.
Okay.
You can't have a leaf surface that is completely open to the environment to lose all its water. There has to be some control of water loss, otherwise it would just dry out.
Yep.
And I suppose that's how plants have evolved, and there are some very extreme variations on this. Like if you think of something like a cactus, you know cacti,
mm-hmm.
they're a particular type of plant called a cam plant. They do is they actually open their leaves at night, take in the carbon dioxide when it's cooler and there's less water loss. During the day, those leaves will be closed, but the plant will use that carbon dioxide to photosynthesize.
Ah, okay.
So there are various ways that plants have evolved to still manage to take in CO2, but limit their loss of water.
Oh, that's quite cunning. I didn't know they did that. The other thing that water does, it's not. We said it was a pump, and it's not really a pump. It's more of a sort of a wick, as you said, which is quite a good analogy. I always think of that need, that movement of water as part of the circulation system to drag nutrients around the plant. Is that?
That's absolutely correct. So what happens with water, the movement of water into plants is both passive and active. So there are certain things that happen in root cells that cause water to flow into the plants and also nutrients. But once water's in the stem, and once the nutrients are in the stem, then that's a passive process. So nutrients will go with the water up through the plant. So things like nitrogen and other things, it's a very important important requirement for the plant, and those things happen together. So the water, or the xylem, which is the tissue that moves water around the plant, that also contains nutrients, and those nutrients are used for all sorts of processes in the plant.
So does that mean that the nutrients will go to the leaves because that's where the water's going?
They can go to the leaves.
But it can go to other places as well?
The movement of water is always upwards. So it's always up and out of the plant. So nutrients will move up and out of the plant. It's a little bit more complex than that. They can move around through various other ways.
Mm-hmm.
There is another tissue called the phloem.
Mm-hmm.
The phloem is where the plant moves sugar around, but it's not just sugar, it's other things as well.
Yep.
And that's multi-directional.
That can go anywhere.
It generally goes from sources to sinks.
Okay.
So a source is a part of the plant that is producing sugar.
That's mainly the leaves.
Yeah, and a sink is somewhere for that sugar to go, which might be the fruit, it might be the roots.
Yeah, because vines, coming into winter, they shift all the sugars into the roots, don't they?
They shift an amount of sugar into the roots. It's a balance, and that's one of the things that viticulturists are keen on doing, making sure that the source-sink relationships are right, because when you produce sugar in the leaves, first of all, you have to have enough leaves to produce enough sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that sugar will go into fruit. Some of that sugar will go into growing tips. Some of those sugars will go into the roots as starch. So a balanced vine is one where those source-sink relationships are in balance and there's enough moved into the roots and the trunk so there's a decent bud burst in the following year, but also there's enough moved into the fruit so you get, you know, high-quality fruit.
Yeah, okay. What happens to the vine under certain climatic conditions, for example, if it's really hot?
If it's really hot, a vine will shut down.
Okay.
So a vine can be shut down by very high temperatures. It will stop photosynthesizing, and there's a lot of work done on the recovery response of vines to that sort of loss of photosynthesis. And it depends on the temperature, it depends on the particular type of vine, it depends on the length of stress. But when it's hot, vines will shut down.
And the reason it's shutting down is it's trying to avoid water loss, is it?
It's trying to protect itself from water damage.
Yeah. So what, the water, if it's really hot, the water's evaporating from the leaves really
too fast. You will get cell damage. So plants will go into something called wilting.
Yeah.
And that's essentially so they don't lose all their water.
Oh, is that what they? That's why they wilt. I thought they just ran out of water.
No, and they will. Sometimes they will recover from that, and sometimes they won't. It depends on the duration.
Yeah,
water is a very interesting thing in a lot of the world's vineyards, because not so much here because we're not allowed to irrigate, but in a lot of regions of the world, like South Africa, California, Australia, New Zealand, you're allowed to irrigate.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found out over the years is that, particularly for red wine, a vine actually prefers, it's better for the composition and the quality of the red wine for the vine to see a small amount of stress,
mm-hmm.
So a mild stress. If your stress is too severe, it's not good. But if you have a mild stress, what you tend to do is you decrease the size of the berry.
Yep.
And when you decrease the size of the berry, you have a higher skin to pulp ratio.
Yep.
And a lot of the colour compounds and flavour compounds are in the skin.
Yep.
So you get better colour, you get an improvement in flavour compounds.
Yep.
You also get some direct effects. So if you provide a vine with a mild water stress, you will increase the thickness of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's direct and indirect effects, which mean you can improve the quality of the wine by giving it a mild water stress.
Okay. And that water stress, if it's doing adaptions like thickening the skins, that would imply that the stress needs to be earlier. Because I would have thought a little bit of water stress just before harvest means that the grapes won't absorb as much water. But if you're stressing earlier, there might be some...
This becomes a bit complex. So there are different times during berry development when stress is appropriate and when it's not appropriate, and you can have different effects. But yeah, it's during berry development and it's during certain parts of berry development. So during ripening, after veraison, it's important to provide a mild stress.
Yep.
If you're courageous enough, you can provide a stress before the lag phase, and you might have a bigger effect on the size of the berry.
So the lag phase is just straight after veraison?
Yeah.
Okay.
The veraison is the lag phase. That's what we call the lag phase.
Okay. So providing a water stress during veraison, is that when you're going to get the thicker skins?
After veraison. And if you apply water stress any time during this, it may, if it's done right, it will have a beneficial effect. But there are times, and it's between veraison and harvest, where you'd look to provide a stress.
Yeah.
But there is debate on this. It's not, we don't have a recipe for it. So there are people who have different points of view,
mm-hmm.
and some people might want to provide a stress before.
Just getting back to heat stress.
Yep.
So just so I can understand this, it's hot, the vine's losing loads of water, so it thinks, I need to shut down that water loss. Mm. So it closes up its pores. So it closes up its pores, doesn't get any CO2 in, which means it can't photosynthesize.
Photosynthesize, but also the leaf heats up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when plants are actively transpiring...
Oh, it cools down, doesn't it? It's like us sweating. Cooling.
Yeah.
We sweat to cool down.
So one thing that transpiration does is allows plants to... their leaves to stay cooler than the atmosphere.
Okay.
So one of the things that does happen if it's too hot and your stomata are... the stomata of the pores, if they shut, you lose no more water, you start to wilt, the leaf will actually get to a stage where its temperature is higher than the atmosphere. And that can cause direct damage to all sorts of things inside the leaf.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And what happens when it's too cold?
When it's very cold, it can be a frost. But
I'm talking about, because vines photosynthesize is a temperature range that they're comfortable. I can't remember what it is, something like 8 to 20 or something.
Vines, there will be a relationship between temperature and photosynthesis. So mm-hmm. optimum photosynthesis might take place around about 24, 25 degrees.
Oh, okay.
So if your temperature goes, below 15 degrees, then you will get a reduction in photosynthesis. So when temperature declines, you get less photosynthesis, less sugar in the plant, less ability to produce and ripen fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our vines have an optimum temperature requirement, but that will change from vine to vine. Like something like Pinot Noir, for instance, the temperature requirements for Pinot Noir are not as high as they would be for, say, something like Zinfandel. So certain things do well at a higher temperature. Other things like Riesling perform better at a lower temperature.
What's driving that? It's biological, but what?
Just variation. We've selected grapevines over the many thousands of years that have performed, performed and survived in certain environments. But it's not just about the sugar. It's also about the acid and other constituents.
And also the flavour, because in South Africa, when vines are under a lot of heat stress, particularly if they've got that leaf roll disease. Leaf roll virus, you get a lot of green flavours in your wine. So even though the wine sugars might be okay and the alcohols are okay, there's a lot of green flavours in the vine. So what's going on there?
A lot of complexity.
Yeah.
You've got... there's a few things that are going on there. One is when it's cooler, there's more acid synthesized in the berry, mm-hmm. particularly malic acid.
That's when they talk about cold nights, the vine holds onto its acidity.
Yeah, it does. And once that acid starts to degrade, the cooler it is, the less it degrades. So the hotter it is, the more it degrades.
Mm-hmm.
So cool temperatures promote synthesis. And warm temperatures promote its degradation. So one of the things that happens as you move to a very cool environment is you get a lot more acid synthesized, and it takes longer after veraison for that acid to degrade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's driven by something called respiration.
Yeah.
We talked about transpiration. That's driven by respiration. So the malic acid is actually used as a source of respiration. And the hotter the temperature, the higher the respiration is.
What's respiration again?
Respiration is the breakdown of sugars.
Okay.
But the berry actually changes from sugar to malic acid. So it's a complex chemical process or biochemical process.
Yeah, that's what I...
But there are other things that happen as well. Like with temperature, often it coincides with shading.
Yep.
And when you shade... when you shade leaves and when you shade fruit, you can get changes to... flavor and aroma compounds, because a lot of these flavor compounds come about from the degradation of things that the berry produces to protect itself from high light. So the carotenes, for instance, the carotenoids, the things that make carrots orange.
Oh yeah.
They're also present in berries and leaves.
Yep.
And they're there to protect the berry from damage early on. When those carotenoids break down, they turn into some very important flavour and aroma compounds. So there's a lot of complexity with what's happening with temperature and light in terms of berry composition.
Mm.
So the green flavours you talk about, it could be acids. It might also be methoxypyrazines, because when a berry is young and green and hard, it produces these compounds called methoxypyrazines, which cause birds to have gastrointestinal malaise. So it will make a bird sick in the tummy.
Yeah.
So it won't want to eat it. After veraison, those methoxypyrazines degrade, but they're very responsive to temperature. So the cooler the environment, the higher the amount of methoxypyrazines synthesized, and the longer it takes for them to degrade.
Okay, and in a very hot temperature, the vine's shutting down anyway, so it's not degrading the methoxies?
No, they will be being degraded from the berries.
Oh, they will?
Yeah.
So why do you get those green flavours in hot temperatures?
That's a good... I would have to look at those hot temperatures. It's not something that I'm overly... It's not a phenomenon that I'm really aware of. I know that there's a lot of research done in, particularly in California, about when you... how long you have to leave fruit out on the vine before you lose the green methoxypyrazines.
Yeah.
And in California, that's called hang time.
Yeah.
Because certain wine consumers don't like any sort of hint of green.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they did a lot of work on hang time. Mm-hmm. So how long would you have to leave a berry out there on the vine before you get rid of all these green notes?
Yeah.
Probably it's better to control the canopy before veraison. It's better maybe to control the amount of methoxypyrazines that form to start with, rather than wait for them to degrade.
Okay, and that might be through leaf plucking.
That's one of the reasons why we might pluck leaves.
And that's okay. So that's to expose the canopy,
expose the berries to light, but also increase the temperature.
Yep.
See, these things happen in combination. Light and temperature often go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have different effects.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And just on that respiration, because I've got a really excellent 5-inch thick scientific textbook on wine, and I remember reading up about the consumption of acids in the wine, and I actually used to think that and sort of what you said, that in warmer temperatures the plant consumes acid, and the cooler temperatures it consumes a lot less acid.
Yeah, and that's driven by respiration. So respiration is all cells respire. Called the citric acid cycle or the Krebs cycle, you would have possibly done it at school.
No.
So all of our cells respire. They need energy to run cell processes.
Yeah.
And that comes from respiration. In the berry, early on, that respiration is driven by sugar, because most of the time we respire sugars. But in the berry, you start to respire malic acid. So there are some... It's complex biochemistry. Well, not too complex. Probably too complex for this interview.
Okay. Yeah.
But... And that's related to temperature. So the hotter it is, the higher the respiration is, the higher the rate of respiration.
What is respiration exactly? It's
the way a plant cell derives most of its energy.
Okay, so it's like the mitochondria.
It happens in the mitochondria, and it's essentially the reverse of photosynthesis.
Okay,
so photosynthesis is making the sugars.
Yeah.
Respiration is breaking those sugars down.
Okay, got you. Yeah, okay.
And it produces energy in the form of something called ATP.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. That's the kind of energy currency of the cell.
Okay. And so the big difference in transpiration and respiration is...
Respiration is the breakdown of sugar and the formation of energy.
Yeah.
Happens in all cells, whether they're plant cells or animal cells. Perfect. Transpiration is a passive process. It's the movement of water from the root zone up through the plant and out into the atmosphere.
Perfect. All right. I think we'll wrap it up there, Greg. Thank you very much.
That's okay. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Chris.